For a scripture passage this morning, I'd like to read from the Gospel of Matthew. You know, and I'm almost reluctant even to tell you what I'm going to preach from, what passage. And I'm almost reluctant to start reading it, because as soon as I do, you're going to think to yourself, it's a Christmas story. Who wants to hear a Christmas story in August? And you're going to tend to tune me out. And I don't like that. Matthew did not write this to be a Christmas story. Matthew had no clue that 2,000 some years later, people were going to even have a day called Christmas. Matthew wrote it to tell people about their God. He's just spent chapter 1, if you're familiar with the book of Matthew, giving a whole list of genealogies that proves that Jesus is the coming Messiah. And how wonderful it is that God is now among humanity. In fact, he says, you will give him the name Emmanuel. He doesn't say call him Jesus because he'll save his people from their sins. No, he says, you will give him the name Emmanuel, which means God with us. What does it mean that God is with us? And I think that's why Matthew wrote this passage that we call chapter 2, beginning at verse 13. It talks about the Magi coming to visit Jesus and presenting him their gifts. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. But when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time that he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead. So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. And so was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, he will be called a Nazarene. So, if the story is about God and what God is doing, what's all this stuff with Herod? I mean, Herod's more in the story than anyone else, any other character. And as you read Matthew's account in the first couple of chapters, Herod didn't even need to be there. I mean, Matthew could have easily jumped from verse 12, having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by a different route. And then he could have gone down, right down to verse 23, and they went and lived in a town called Nazareth. You didn't even need the stuff about Herod in there. And that's what we do when we talk about the Christmas time. I mean, you've never seen a Christmas card with Herod on it. You've never sung a carol about butchering of the babies in Bethlehem. We don't even like to talk about Herod. So why does Matthew include Herod in this passage to begin with? I don't know you how much you know about Herod the Great, but he was about the first century's equivalent of Stalin or Hitler. An egomaniac who killed anyone who got in his way. He was the terror of all the Jewish people. He was fiercely loyal to Caesar Augustus, and that's how he got the job as king of the Jews. I mean, he was a king of the Jews, but he was a subject of Caesar Augustus. And even though he was fiercely loyal to Caesar Augustus had nothing but contempt for Herod. Herod killed so many Jewish people and so many members of his own family that Caesar once commented that it was safer to be Herod's pig than Herod's son. Claiming to be Jewish, he wouldn't eat pork. But he certainly killed a lot of his family. He killed his three sons. Well, three of his sons he killed. He killed Mariamne, his favorite wife, and then spent the rest of his life mourning the fact that she was gone. In fact, Herod was so contemptible, he knew that when he died, the people of Jerusalem were going to celebrate. So what Herod did is he issued a decree, an executive order, that when he died, the firstborn child of all the leading families in Jerusalem would be executed so that everyone would be in mourning on the same day that Herod died. That's the kind of person he was. And so you're thinking to yourself, so why this Herod stuff at all? I mean, this is supposed to be the coming of God into the world and what it means that Emmanuel is with us, and yet there's roadblocks. There's always roadblocks. Here's this guy, Herod, the main character of the story, and he's calling all the shots. He gets to do what he wants, and everybody else better duck and run for cover. Because Herod's the absolute ruler. So why does he even get this press? What's Matthew thinking? What is the author trying to tell his audience? You see, it wasn't easy being a Jewish Christian. And most scholars are quite certain that that's who Matthew's audience was. Not just Christians, they had a hard enough time in the Roman Empire, but being a Jewish Christian was particularly dangerous and lonely. You see, the Jewish religion was protected by the Roman Empire. You could be a Jew and not worship the emperor. You could be a Jew and only worship your one God. But no other religion had that option. And Christians, well, they were not Jewish people. Not Jewish religion. The Jewish religion very carefully tried to separate itself from these new Christians. And so if you were a Jewish person and you became a Christian, first of all, you'd be kicked out of the synagogue. You would be, because the synagogue ruled things, rejected by your family and by your friends. You would only be accepted in the community of other Christians, particularly other Jewish Christians. And these people had to be wondering to themselves, is this really worth it? I mean, What's in it for us? Is God really going to see me through all the difficulties and troubles that I'm going to be facing because of the fact that I'm now a follower of Christ? And I think that's one of the reasons why Matthew's gospel has more fulfilled prophecies from the Old Testament than Mark, Luke, and John put together. Matthew is continually pointing to the fact that Jesus is the fulfillment of all these prophecies. And okay, so how's that going to help these people being Jewish Christians? I mean, it really should be much better than this. And we can look at life today and it's, yeah. Why do some families seem to get all things dumped on them? Why do some seem to prosper and grow rich off other people? And why do some people get sick all the time? Why are some families always destitute? There are hurts and injustices in life. I mean, there's depression. We have friends who've struggled with depression all of their lives. And God, why? Why does this stuff happen? Why can't it ever get better? And what are they supposed to do about this? It all seems so wrong so much of the time. I mean, look at these verses. When the Magi had gone, the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt because Herod is going to try to kill him. Then verse 16. When Herod realized he had been outwitted, he was furious and gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under. Why this? And then verse 22. Happily, they're returning to the land of Israel, and then, and he heard Archelaus was reigning in place of his father Herod. Archelaus is no better at all, so once again, plans are thwarted. Once again, evil seems to reign. It all seems so wrong so much of the time, and we look at the world around us today, and it feels the same way, doesn't it? Seems so wrong so much of the time. We feel like God gets squeezed out by the tyrants and the powerful. But then notice what's really going on in this passage. In Matthew's way of writing, the Lord appeared to Joseph and said, get up, take the child and escape to Egypt. Herod's going to try to kill him. And so it was fulfilled what the word of the Lord had said through the prophet. Out of Egypt, I called my son. Oh, and then Herod kills all the baby boys in Bethlehem. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. Rachel weeping for her children. See, evil with all of its cleverness walks right into the plan of God, like a fly walking into a spider's web. It was all planned. Evil can try its best, but it works right into the plan of God. In fact, it works so much into the plan of God that God previously said, yeah, this is what's going to happen. In fact, if you look more closely at the passage, it seems like evil never had a chance because God is at work. Every move Herod makes, check, nothing works out the way he thought it would. So you see what Matthew is saying to his readers and to us? When it looks in the world as if evil is winning, the situation is firmly in the hand of God. When it seems like there's nothing on the horizon but blackness and despair, God says, I've got this. It may look like God is doing nothing at all, but God is really doing very much. You may not be able to see God working visibly and dramatically like you do evil in the world, but he's got this. And that's what Matthew is telling his readers. Three times in this passage that we read, three times evil does its worst, and three times the will of God comes out on top. So they escaped to Egypt, and so was fulfilled what the Lord said. Out of Egypt I called my son. So Herod decides in retaliation to kill all the baby boys in Bethlehem. Then was fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. And then he goes back home and Archelaus is there. And so they head up to Nazareth and then the third time. And so it was fulfilled what was said through the prophets. He will be called a Nazarene. Three times. And I don't know if you know this, but to the Jewish people, to say something over, to emphasize a point three times was like the superlative, like we say good, better, and best. Matthew was saying, to the ultimate degree, God is saying, I've got this. I am in control. And it doesn't matter what Herod may try to do, it's not going to work. It doesn't matter what evil may try to do, that isn't going to work either, because I've got this. Who would have guessed a year ago what 2020 was going to be like? You couldn't have, in your craziest imagination, have come up with a year like this. Thankfully, it's already over half done. But who knows what the rest of the year is going to bring, and who knows what 2021 is going to bring? Job loss, businesses closed, remote school, elections, emergencies, pandemics, who knows? But you know the point that God is making? I've got this. I've got it. In a world like we live in today, in a time of uncertainty like we have right now in 2020, you need a place to stand. You need somewhere solid that you can say, this will carry me through. And God is saying, I've got this. I've got it. That's why Matthew shows us this picture, this section of chapter 2, which really doesn't even need to be in the Bible. He's trying to tell us something about this God of ours. Yeah, the future is not going to be all rosy. God never planned that, or told us that it would be. And as you can see from this passage of Jesus' family, his parents, it certainly wasn't going to be for them either. The future may not be rosy, but God is with you. Emmanuel, God with us. And what does that mean, that God is with us? Matthew tells us, hey, it doesn't matter what the political powers might try to do. It doesn't matter what the tyrants might come up with. It doesn't matter what disaster there is. I've got this, God says. Whatever evil is attempting to do, God will turn it on its head, and his plan will win. We don't know what the future holds. I don't know what the rest of 2020 holds. But God will turn it on its head, and he will be there. Jesus said that comment, made that comment to his disciples toward the end of his earthly ministry. He said, in this world you will have trouble, but fear not, I have overcome the world. And that is a message for us. God is with us. And see, if God's got this, then I can live confidently, and I don't need to stress out about every little thing that happens. If God's got this, then I don't have to worry about me. I can focus on others. And I think, see, Matthew's telling us this for a couple of reasons. One, he wants us to have confidence that God is in control. But I think, secondly, he's trying to tell us, so you don't need to focus on yourself because God's got you. You can direct your love, your attention, your concern to those around you. God doesn't tell us this just so we feel good in bad times, but so that we can live for him. To be his light in a world that seems to be increasingly dark. To show some goodness and some kindness and some consideration to even one person. The other day, doesn't matter the situation, but somebody said to me, I really appreciate you. And I thought, wow. And what it did for the rest of the day is it lifted me up. See, what does it take to say those four words to someone? What does it take to be courteous in the grocery store? What does it take, and this is to me more than anyone else probably, what does it take not to lay on your horn when yet another person cuts in front of you? And you have to get somewhere really bad, really fast. What does it take for us to show a little bit of love to someone else and to bring the goodness of Christ's love into them? What if we as a Christian community focused on bringing the love of God to all the people we meet, not judging, not protesting, not criticizing, but just loving another person who may have a political view or an attitude that's completely opposite of yours? I know it's going to be tough. But remember, God saying, hey, I've got this. Can you really think of a better way to face tomorrow than with that kind of a mindset? Having the voice of God speaking to you over all of the noise and all of the confusion of the world, saying to you, I've got this. I've got it. You don't need to worry about it. Let that be your hope. And let that be your confidence as you face tomorrow, as you deal with the month of August with all of the uncertainty and confusion that it might bring, as you deal with the rest of this year and with the rest of your life, with your future. Remember, Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble, but I've overcome the world. Let the message from God to you be this. I've got this. Go in the peace of God.